Guru Angauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 24. Srijami tapasa vedam. Srijami tapasa vedam. Krasami tapasa punaha. Krasami tapasa punaha. Bibarmi tapasa vishvam. Bibarmi tapasa vishvam. Viryam me duskaram tapaha. Viryam me duskaram tapaha. Srijami tapasa vedam. Krasami tapasa punaha. Bibarmi tapasa vishvam. Viryam me duskaram tapaha. Vaishnavis? Okay. Shujami, I create. Tapasa, by the same energy of penance. Eva, certainly. Idam, this. Krasami tapasa, I do withdraw also by the same energy. Punaha, again. Bibarmi, do maintain. Tapasa, by penance. Vishvam, the cosmos. Viryam, potency. Me, my. Dushkaram, severe. Tapaha, penance. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is Lord Krishna speaking. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home, back to Godhead, and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. Even for material prosperity, name, and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why, then, are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? Question. An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in his devotional service. The order is received from the Lord either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. Om Gnati Madam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swarmupa Kadamayam Dharati Swaparantikam. So once again, this is the Lord speaking, and he's using the word penance, and as was already kind of understood in previous classes, but I'll just want to touch upon it again to really solidify the point and clarify it as far as possible. Not the penance that's described in the Webster's or Oxford Dictionary, definition being voluntary self-punishment inflicted as an outward expression of repentance for having done wrong. So forget about that definition. It's not applicable here. The general definition that we're used to as devotees for penance, because we've heard, we've got it from Prabhupada, is penance means voluntarily accepting suffering to the body and mind for the purpose of making advancement in spiritual life. But I'd like this, and that's a correct definition, of course, but I'd like to suggest that I think Prabhupada is introducing us to an even broader and simultaneously more nuanced definition here. And he introduces that in the previous report, where he says that the penance by which one can see the personality of Godhead face to face is understood as devotional service to the Lord and nothing else. Only by discharging devotional service and transcendental love can one approach the Lord. So it's broadening it out. And then he goes on to say that actually penance is the internal potency of the Lord. It's non-different from him. And then at the end of that first paragraph, he makes the point that penance is a manifestation of the transcendental potency. So here, two things are going on. The Lord's speaking in the translation, and he's saying what he does as penance. He's talking, talking himself, and he's saying, it's by penance I create this cosmos. And he says, it's by penance that I maintain it, and it's by penance that I withdraw it. This, he says, the same energy, like that. So in the purport, Prabhupada's talking about what we should do. See, so we're hearing in the translation what Krishna does by penance, and in the purport, Prabhupada has chosen to emphasize what we should do as penance. So I'll say something about the translation first. Krishna's saying he creates this cosmos by such penance. Well, penance in the sense of, as I mentioned here, it says penance is the internal potency of the Lord. It's a manifestation of the transcendental potency. So how that's so is this. Now, this is my understanding. I hope it's correct. That, because it's mentioned here that for the devotee, for the living entity, that penance is devotional service. And it's the way of seeing the Lord face to face. So Krishna reciprocates with Krishna reciprocates with the living entities. Krishna, even before that, Krishna has love for all his parts and parcels. He has love for those who are serving him favorably. There was and he reciprocates with them. That's, everybody understands that. I did a little research on this particular point. There was something Prabhupada wrote called the Conception of Gita Nagari, pre-1967. And in that essay, he stated, the personality of Godhead is known as the devotee of his devotee. Okay, so that's there. And also in a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1996 on the verse, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Name Dvesto Stinapriya, Ye Bhajante Tumam Bhakja, Maite Teshu Chapiyaham. Prabhupada explained, he quoted, I believe it was either Baladev Bijibhusan or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, saying how Krishna becomes the devotee of his devotee. And he elaborated upon that throughout that entire lecture. So that's there. And now somebody might say, well, yeah, but so Krishna's reciprocating with his devotees, but you know, the creation is basically for conditioned souls. So what's the relationship? Well, I think the relationship is this, that as I think I've already mentioned, that we're all devotees. All the living entities are devotees. And the ultimate issue, what's that verse? Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sabu Kabanaya Shravanadi Sudha Chitta Kordeo Daida. Pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity. And we all know, I mean, it's not, that's just one, like a Shastric reference, but well accepted and understood point that every living entity is ultimately a devotee of Krishna. So Krishna is creating this cosmic manifestation. This is penance, it's mentioned penance, it's an act of his internal potency. It's for the purpose of giving his beloved but illusioned parts and parcels a chance to come back to the spiritual world again. And that's what's, you know, that's what's meant here by the, I create this cosmos by penance. It's an act of the internal potency. And it's an act, it's a manifestation of Krishna's love for his parts and parcels, his Vibhinamsa expansions, some of whom have unfortunately misused their independence and have been fallen into illusion, have become over controlled by the external energy. So just to support that point, a few brief Shastric references here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 5, text 24, in the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and that is its main purpose. The Lord is so kind, then in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting, and thus the creation takes place. And then in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10, text 2, in the purport again, Prabhupada says, the Lord wants the suffering human beings to come back home, back to him, and to cease to suffer the threefold material pangs. The whole plan of creation is made in that way. Then 3925 purport says, the Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. The whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord. And everyone is meant for that purpose. The Lord gives the fallen souls the chance for this highest perfection of life. And then finally, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ninth canto, chapter 24, I believe it's text 58, there's a nice statement where it says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts through his material energy in the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this cosmic manifestation just to deliver the living entity by his compassion and stop the living entity's death and duration of materialistic life. Thus, he enables the living being to return home back to Godhead. So I'm suggesting through that, you know, these references, and the point I'm making is that this is what we're hearing is tantamount to what we're hearing here in the today's translation, which is, I create this cosmos by such penance. It's kind of, it's my attempt to give some insight into what that is meant by that point. Okay, so then that's what Krishna does. And what we do, what we're supposed to do, Prabhupada elaborates upon that in the purport here, we're supposed to take to devotional service, as we just heard mentioned here in one of the references I gave. Everyone is meant for that purpose, you know, to try to improve themselves in devotional service. That's the only real purpose of the cosmic manifestation. And Prabhupada points out in the purport here that the Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in discharging devotional service. So, on that point, to get some insight into that, it's not like Krishna's, you know, sadistic or anything like that. I was trying to give the living entity a hard time. No, he really wants to see. He's doing that because he really wants to see that the candidates, you know, the aspiring devotees are getting it, that they're learning, that they're actually making some progress, because he wants to take us back home, back to Godhead. So that's why he's interested to see how painstakingly the devotee is in his devotional service, because we have to, you have to be a pure devotee or pretty close to it, as you, before you get it, you know, are eligible to go back to Godhead. So, mundane analogy here to illustrate this point. When I was in high school, I had a economics teacher, Mr. Rosenblatt, and he was a good teacher, but he had this idea that he really wanted his students to learn, you know, the material. So what he used to do is he used to give a homework assignment every day, and it was like questions, about 5 or 10 questions, and you could use your textbooks to answer the questions, do the homework assignment, and then you had to hand it in the next day, and he would grade it. He would just read it and see if you get, even with the textbook, you got the correct answer, and he'd give you a grade. And he'd enter that grade, and that grade was counted every much as the midterm or the end term. It was just averaged in there with all the other big, you know, exams that you had to sit in the classroom and take. And if somebody came to class the next day and they didn't have their homework, he would go, okay, so-and-so, you don't know homework? Okay, then here's a nice 0 for you. And he put a big 0 in with all the other test grades, you know. He was trying to make the point that you got to do it. I want to see that you guys are that you're really going to learn this material. So he made that arrangement. So he made that arrangement to make sure that the students were painstakingly studying the material, you know, that the economics stuff that he was trying to teach us. So in the same way, Krishna makes arrangements to see that the devotees are painstakingly engaging in devotional service. You know, he wants everybody to be squeaky clean by the time they're ready to give up this material body and hopefully be taken back home, back to Godhead. So that's a point there. And Prabhupada specifically says here that the specific form that takes is executing the instruction, the order of the spiritual master. It says the order is received from the Lord either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. Well, in our case, it's received through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is a severe type of penance. So just on that point, that's a very important thing. It's an important point. It's an important point to meditate on, because sometimes we get sidetracked, distracted, or have a misconception about what it is to perform penance. But here we've been given a very practical definition of what it is. It's to painstakingly execute the order of the spiritual master. That's what Prabhupada is saying here, is a fear type of penance. In other words, there's other things, you know, that are coming to the picture, but that should be the focal point. Painstakingly to understand what is the order of the spiritual master, and then to painstakingly execute it—that severe type of penance, not you know, eating nothing or not sleeping. Well, those are also part of devotional service. But, you know, a devotee has to be intelligent, has to be able to, you know, kind of put everything in the proper perspective and really meditate on what does the spiritual master, what's he want? What will please him? And then, and just, you know, focus on that and then painstakingly try to do what's required to please the spiritual master. That's the penance. That's the tapasya. So, well, just one teeny bit more on the creation here. This is the technical point. It talks about Krishna saying, he's talking about creating the cosmos by such penance. But, of course, it's stating here the earlier in the chapter, the Lord. It doesn't say whether it's Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna or whatever. But, of course, just a technical point again, is that Krishna himself is not directly responsible for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the cosmic manifestation. He does that via his expansion. See? So we get information from the Brahma Samhita that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govindamadi Purusham, Tamaham Bhajami. And then he expands, his first expansion is Balaram. And then from Balaram, there's a second expansion of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And then from Sankarshan, of that first quadruple expansion, expands as Narayan. And Narayan, from that Narayan, there's a quadruple expansion of Vasudev, Mahasankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And from that second Sankarshan is referred to as Mahasankarshan, expands as Mahavishnu. Then Mahavishnu expands as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands as Shiradakshay Vishnu. But Garbhadakshay Vishnu also, from a lotus emanating from his navel, gives birth to Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma, of course, gives birth to the, or expands, maybe is the correct term, as the four Kumaras, Chaturasana, and then they refuse to get married and populate the universe, so he expanded as the Rudras, and that didn't work out so well either. And then, he expanded as, or generated, the Manasaputras, mentally generated sons, and then that sort of worked out, and he was able to start populating the universe. So that's just a... Okay, I'll elaborate upon that. The four Kumaras, as I think I just mentioned, they refused. They were asked to get married and procreate, and they said, sorry, Dad, we're not going to do it. We want to really focus on our spiritual lives here. And Lord Brahma was actually upset. He didn't appreciate that. He kind of felt insulted about that, but he's very self-controlled personality. But because he was very angry from his, I think it's mentioned, between his eyes, or he generated a form, Rudra, which is has something to do with Lord Shiva. And he created the Rudras. And along with the Rudras, there was some Rudrani. And it doesn't mention that they procreated, procreated by sexual intercourse, but anyway, they multiplied. You know, the Rudras multiplied, but they were destroying the whole universe. That's what's described in the Bhagavatam. So Lord Brahma, basically, at some point, even though they were populating the universe, had to tell them to chill out. He told them to chill out, to just take it easy for a while, Rudra. You know. Thank you very much for what you've done so far, but, you know, just cease and desist. And, which he did. He cooperated. And then he proceeded to, because he had this mission, you know, he had to populate the universe, so he generated sons from his mind, and they referred to as the Manasaputras. And then I can't remember how Swayambhuva Manu comes into the picture. He's not one of the Manasaputras, correct? Anyway, that's... I'm missing a point there, but Swayambhuva Manu... Oh, wait. Swayambhuva Manu is called Kayam, He actually is also an expansion of the body of Lord Brahma. And so is Satarupa, his consort. And then they were the first pair to engage in reproduction by the normal process that we're used to. And then they were successfully able to start populating the universe. But I can't remember how you get from the Manasaputras to Swayambhuva Manu. But anyway, main point being, though, that this tapasya is something of the internal potency. For us, it means voluntarily accepting, doing, as Prabhupada says here, painstakingly trying to execute the instruction of the spiritual master and doing whatever is required for that purpose. And as in the translation, as stated, Krishna himself engages in penance or tapasya, but in the form I mentioned, it's an act of love. And he's doing that to try to facilitate, give his parts and parcels who have strayed from pure devotional service an opportunity to return to pure devotional service. And he does that in the form of creating the cosmic manifestation, which is nothing other than really like a school, to give us a chance to kind of get our act together again, basically. But there's one reference I could read here if I can find it. Okay, I can't find it. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Or questions or comments? Yeah, Ananda Kirtan. Okay.
Hare Krishna. So you're explaining how the universe, the cosmos, is meant for to help the jivas come back to the spiritual world, to rectify the spirit souls.
Yeah.
So about maybe like a month or two ago, I met some guy while I was distributing books, and he had some good questions. He was a sincere person, so I spent about like a half hour with him, probably, trying to answer his questions. And he was asking about how does the soul fall down into the spiritual world. So I was trying to explain to the best of my understanding, but it just didn't make sense to him. How can a pure soul, who is supposedly a pure devotee of God, turn away from God and want to enter into the spirit or come down to the material world? So can you explain what you would say to such a person? He was a very intellectual person, so he just he couldn't understand that point. And I was trying my best, but he liked everything else I said, but that point it didn't really make sense to him.
Well, I don't think I'd do much better than what you did, I'm sure. I would just say it's misuse of independence. I'd probably try to give him an analogy. Just say something like here in the United States, everybody's born a free citizen. Everybody has used to anyway, or theoretically, has tremendous opportunity to, to live as a law-abiding citizen, get educated, have a career, have a good life, so forth and so on. Some people choose to do otherwise. They choose to try to be happy living in defiance or, non-compliance or rebellion with the law of the land, the arrangement of the government. That's their free choice. What can you do,
Yeah, I said something like that, but he said, but now you're talking about conditioned souls in that analogy. But what you're trying to explain is that a pure soul who's a pure devotee of God, who was there for since time immemorial, how does he make that mistake?
A pure soul always has a...
How does he make that mistake?
A pure soul always has an opportunity to become an impure soul. Yeah. The difference between the pure souls and the impure souls is that the pure souls don't exercise that. It's like a stock option. I don't know. It's that opportunity is always there. And just like today, you could rob a bank. You could, you know, you could, but you're not, hopefully you're not gonna. So it's that's the way it goes. Yeah, using that, the classic example of a relationship between a man and a woman. So, you know, it's a, in a loving relationship, there's always an opportunity to, you know, somebody to do something else. It's free will. If both people aren't in a loving relationship because they freely want to be doing that, if one is being forced, you know, by the other, then it's not a loving relationship anymore. That's something else. See, so in the same way, in order for there to be a loving relationship between Krishna and living entities, that freedom is always there, just like the freedom in a loving relationship between like a man and woman in that, you know, sort of conjugal relationship. So that freedom has to be there, and that means if freedom is there, there's always the opportunity to misuse it. That would be the best I could do. Somebody else would like to, yeah, Archita or Maharaj.
Krishna is the most attractive, all attractive. Part of that attraction is his complete independence. So it's not like you're choosing between going to college or going to jail. That's not the choice in the spiritual world. There's no Maya there that's going, psst, come here. It's not like that. There is no Maya to attract you. The attractive force is actually Krishna himself. But because we have minute independence, we can want to be Krishna. That's the choice, to either remain yourself as a servant of Krishna, or to be Krishna. And because Krishna is so attractive, you can be attracted in that way. Again, it's not making a choice between something that's obviously good, like going to college, or something that's obviously bad, like going to jail. It's not that kind of choice. Mm-hmm. Everything there is perfect. So the perfect living entity is attracted to the perfect Lord, but at any moment, like Brigapati said, you can make the wrong choice of trying to be the Lord. And then it's not like you're looking at the spiritual world and the material world and making the wrong choice. As soon as you have that desire to become the Lord instead of serve the Lord, then you get sent to the material world. You see, you didn't make the choice to go to LA, you know, instead of Goloka. You made the choice of trying to become Krishna, and therefore you get sent to LA or Boston or Patala. Actually, you start at the top, as we know. You start as Brahma, and then you can work your way down to Patala. So the choice is, do I want to be a servant of Krishna, as I've always been, or do I want to be Krishna? And that Krishna is both very attractive, and therefore you can make that mistake. Yeah, what would it be like to be the Lord, to be the person that's always being glorified and looked up to and worshipped? And therefore you can make that mistake. And if you can't exercise that opportunity in the spiritual world, you can only do that in the material world. And therefore you get sent to the material world.
Yeah, that's really, I thought that was really well explained. Any, Maharaj, do you want to say something further on that point? Sure.
Thank you very much, Archita. That's pretty much exactly what I wanted to say. The point is this, is that there, as you mentioned, the living entity has independence, and he can consider, what is it like to be a Lord? Glorified, honored, bowed down to, applauded, like that. Or how does it feel to be in that position? Because the position the living entity is in is basically the submissive position. He's surrendered, he's giving, he's loving, he's not really taking. In the sense that he's not being glorified, he's not being honored, he's not being applauded, he's not being bowed down to. So that's a different experience, and it's a lordly experience, and it's an experience that only God gets to experience. So when that experience becomes so overwhelmingly important to know, to feel, to taste, that's the point where that living entity no longer wants to stay in the spiritual world to serve the Supreme Spirit. Doesn't want to do that. Rather, he wants to get it. He wants to receive it. He wants to experience it. And that's what it's about. And again, as you mentioned, he has the independence to go forth and try to experience something which is not going to be any good for him at all. And even the Lord is there. You know, Lord Chaitanya tells us, Jiveda Swarupa Hoy, Krishna Nityata. No, no, no. The position of a living entity is to be an eternal servant of the Lord and not to be a replacement for the Lord or an equal of the Lord. So if we don't listen to that, we disobey it, we ignore it, disregard it, well, then we have to suffer the consequences, which is we're cast into this world, which we call Maya, and then we begin to think, yeah, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm glorious, I'm this, I'm that. And everything is I, and it, whereas before it was thou, or you, Lord. You're my all. Now I'm my all. So that becomes, it takes so many millions and millions and billions of years for people to discover that's the cause of their problem. Prabhupada makes this abundantly clear again and again and again that our problem is stop trying to be God and try to be the servant of God. And that will clear up and clean up all of your life and your purposes, basically.
So if you meet that guy now, do you think you're going to be able to... If you meet that guy now, do you think you'd be able to give him a better answer? No, I'm talking to Ananda Kirtan. I was asking him if he meets that person now, who asked him that question, does he feel better armed to answer his question? Yeah. Okay. We had one... Somebody else? Swash, did you want to say something? Yeah.
You know, on this principle of free will, I'm not quite sure that any of us really knew that we had any free will. At least I didn't until I met Srila Prabhupada. Because when you're living in it was your conditioned soul, you're just going on whatever you want to do. But I'm not sure that we really think that that's free will. We're just going on with our life. I think I didn't realize anything about the principle of independence or free will until I met Srila Prabhupada and I heard what he had to say. And I thought it was very intriguing here that in the purport, it says here that the Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. So, I think that's where the independence or the free will comes. In other words, how deeply do you want to go? How much painstaking activity do you want to perform to serve Krishna? That then you realize, well, this is my free will. How deep do you want to go? Maybe I just want to go 20%. Maybe I want to go 50%. And maybe like a pure devotee goes 100%. And I think that that's explained in the purport in that particular sentence. And then the next thing that I thought was very intriguing was that the order is received from the Lord either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master to execute that order, however painstaking. So we sing every morning, Yasya Prasadam Bhagavat Prasad, Yasya Prasadam Nagatika Topi. So that is our free will. We understand that's the principle of free will. If you want to be involved in painstaking activity to develop your Krishna consciousness, that's your free will. Otherwise, you can do whatever that you wish you can do. So as a devotee, we try to take that painstaking position and we try to perform severe penance. And then we rightfully are using our free will to come closer to Krishna.
Yeah, so let me see if I understood you correctly. So it's just like the animals, they don't have free will. They're just totally acting according to instinctual drives.
Their senses,
right.
Their mind
senses. And human beings in a lower stage, human beings until they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, also, it could be argued, don't really have free will. They're just engaging in this type of sense gratification or that type of sense gratification.
Yeah.
But when you come in contact with this knowledge or the bona fide spiritual master and you understand about I can engage in devotional service or I can engage in trying to gratify my senses, that's when you're really having the opportunity to exercise your free will in a very significant, meaningful way. Was that sort of...
Yeah, because otherwise the living entity is being whipped around by the three modes of material nature. you know, we take birth, we have karmic karma, and we're just acting according to the modes of nature. And only till you meet by some causeless mercy a pure devotee of the Lord, you don't really wake up to this idea of free will. Whatever free will people are thinking about today is simply based on the bodily platform of life. You know, all the different types of things that go on in the material world. Everybody wants freedom. But it's all focused on the bodily platform of life.
Yeah.
So it's not really freedom, it's bondage. It's bondage under the guidance of the three modes of material nature. And that's why you have so many different kinds of individuals. Ignorance, passion, goodness. But only till you meet a pure devotee of the Lord do you really get an opportunity to understand this principle of free will. And that principle is based on going back home, back to Godhead.
Yeah. Archit is burning to say something, so he can be the last person, and we'll wrap it up.
Hare Krishna, there's one aspect that we didn't touch on, and that's the point that you can't understand or experience the absolute truth by your intellect. So this guy may have been very intelligent materially. There's a nice story that illustrates that about the gentleman who went to see, very, very highly intellectual person, went to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when he arrived, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was busy, and he said, tell him I'm busy right now, but he can, you know, my disciples will engage him until I'm ready to see him. And so they gave him the job of polishing the deity brass. And he was submissive enough that he did that for hours. And then later on, when he was done, he came back, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, well, now I'm ready to ask you a question. What's your question? Oh, I don't have the question anymore. I've understood. Just by doing a little seva, he was able to understand, get the answers to the questions that he had. So it's the same thing with this guy. You have to tell him, you can't experience bhakti or you can't understand the philosophy of bhakti just by your intellect. You really have to start the surrendering process by doing a little service. And then the answers will come.
Ooh. Okay, right. Judha Karma and then Sachidana. We're getting some.
I just wanted to touch on another point that you mentioned. You know, you quoted some verses that's like Krishna's mercy, you know, that he gives the conditioned souls a chance. Because, you know, if someone souls have misused their free will, Krishna could just put them in a state of suspended animation eternally. That's just be finished with them. But, you know, just like inside the Mahavishnu, the souls are in a state of suspended animation, susupti, like deep dreamless sleep. So Krishna doesn't have to manifest universes and give us the chance to return to him. That's out of his compassion and mercy that we have that opportunity. So I just wanted to return to that point. That's Krishna's compassion and mercy. And it's an austerity in a sense, a penance in the sense that he could just be enjoying with, you know, the gopis and the cowherd boys. And he doesn't have to bother himself about making universes and creating systems for us to become devotees. But he does it.
Mm. Yeah, thank you very much for that comment. Sachidanoy, and then we're well and truly finished. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. I just want to come back to the topic of tapasya, that everything that we do, it's been read and explained by Srila Prabhupada, is around austerities, materially or spiritually. The line that caught my attention is like saying, by the potency, but that same potency, I create this. So, you know, it reminds me that when Srila Prabhupada was here, we heard many stories of those devotees who engaged in severe tapasya and austerities, doing everything for Srila Prabhupada. So that means for that love. So the higher principle here is for love. So if you don't have love and you misplace your tapasya in material affairs, family, friends, and it's okay, appreciative, people appreciate that, but it will end, because next life you're going to have more family, you're going to, so on. So another example came to me that the Lord himself, Krishna himself, 5,000 years ago when he came and he went to the Gurukula school with Sandipani Muni, he himself went to do this tapasya, or going in the forest, and there's a storming rain, and he got caught in the darkness and rain and freezing. He was displaying his human child-like activity. He's God himself. But he did that tapasya.
Showing by his own example.
He did that tapasya, but why did he do that? Out of love. So out of love, we can do anything and overcomes any toll. That's the potency. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita says, Idante natapakshaya nabaktasya kadachana nachaksu susavivacha nachamam yo abhyasuyati. Krishna says, this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So, this only, like Prabhu was saying in Druta Karma, our causeless mercy also can be given. And Lord Krishna also, Narayana told Brahma, Yaidam Paramam Guhye Madhvaktasya Vina. For he's explaining that this confidential knowledge can be only be revealed if all that you want to know about me is in the scriptures. You should very carefully take it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Very great comment.
Thank you.
Mother Krishakti, and then we'll finish.
Srila Prabhupada knew that this was a very difficult topic to understand. And I know two ways that he explained it. The burning house, we're in a burning house, don't try to understand how the house caught on fire, just try to get out. And then the other one is the crow on top of the tall tree, that the speculators are sitting under the tall tree, under the tree, and a piece of fruit falls, and well, did the crow make it fall because he flied and landed? Did he peck on the fruit and make it fall? Did the wind do it? There's a lot of speculation that goes on and how we fell.
Right. Judah Krum makes a good point about that, though, in conversations I've had with him. Whether you think it's falling from the spiritual world or falling from the Brahma Jyoti or falling from the Tathashta or whatever, everybody, all the transcendentalists will agree that we are fallen. How we fell, where we fell from, okay, doesn't really matter in one sense, but we are fallen and we should be focusing on how to get out. And Prabhupada said something like that too. He quoted Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Just don't worry about that. Just focus on how to get out. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.